personally, I don't feel the great need to spend a massive amount of time investigating the idea that the world is run by shape-shifting lizards.
It seems to be a team of three or four civilians, one of which is Donald President Trump.
I'm Brian Kloss, and you're listening to Power Corrupts, the podcast where we shine a light onto the hidden and often nefarious forces that shape our world. That's the sound of Mad Mike Hughes lifting off in March 2018 in his homemade rocket. A rocket that he said would help prove a long-standing conspiracy theory, that the Earth is flat. Here's what Mad Mike told NBC News in early 2018.
After 9/11, I just started questioning things. But the flat Earth, I'm thinking, well, wait a second. And you start studying all these videos, and you do some own observation. Okay. You're trying to make sense of all these different facts. You start putting this puzzle together with all these missing pieces, and I don't care about what they're telling us about from space. You start finding these places that's flat on this planet. Kansas is flat, okay? I'm telling you, I've been there, it's flat. People saying about stars, or we've got a rover on Mars. Where is the curvature where we live? I can't find it.
So there is a group of people out there who think that the Earth is not round, that the Earth is flat.
That's Jason Reifler. He's an expert on conspiracy theories and a professor of political science at the University of Exeter.
One of the corollaries is, of course, if Earth is flat, then there's no trip to the moon. Then there's the story of a very talented engineer who would make homemade rockets and was trying to make these rockets so that he could blast off into space and prove that the Earth was flat. I never fully understood the logic there. But I mean, this is clearly somebody who believes it. If you're spending your free time and your money on building rockets at home.
Well, it turns out that Mad Mike only went up a few hundred feet in his rocket. So his venture to take pictures of a frisbee-like Earth haven't exactly been realized yet. But it got me wondering, what causes people to believe in unhinged conspiracy theories? How much of an impact do they have on how people perceive the world? And how are conspiracy theories affecting our politics? Those are the questions that we tackle in today's episode, as we explore whether the world is controlled by shape-shifting lizards, or whether Denver International Airport is actually a secret hub for the Illuminati, or whether John Kerry successfully managed to split a hurricane in half with a laser beam sent from Antarctica. We'll look at the weird, the wild, and the downright dangerous as we try to uncover the secrets of understanding conspiracy theory belief. Is it possible for the Prime Minister of a major world power to simply vanish without a trace? To answer that question, we travel back in time, 50 years ago, with a true story that ended up spawning a whole world of conspiracy theories to explain it. And that story is about the disappearance of Australia's former Prime Minister, a man named Harold Holt, a man who simply vanished. And here to tell that story is James Elton Pym, an Australian journalist who recently wrote about the story to mark its 50th anniversary.
So the story goes that Harold Holt drove his car, which was a very attractive maroon Pontiac, down to Cheviot Beach, which was a beach just outside Melbourne, in December, near Christmas, in 1967. It was Sunday morning. He was in a sort of celebratory mood because he'd just wrapped up his first full year in office as Prime Minister. He was out celebrating with some friends, and then the Prime Minister, Harold Holt, suggested to them that they go for a swim. This is a very fit Prime Minister of ours in the day. He was a 59-year-old man at that point, and he was a very keen swimmer, a very keen spear fisherman, and he liked to do that on his weekends. He loved it, and he was known as a very reliable swimmer who knew the coast really well and knew the sea, knew the ocean really well. Swimming's a really big part of the Australian culture, but particularly Harold Holt was known for this. It was part of his kind of image and brand as Prime Minister.
So you've got Harold Holt, this fit, jovial Prime Minister, who decides to celebrate a year in office by taking a dip in the ocean.
But this particular day, the people who he was with say that the tide was very high, the surf was very rough. No one was really keen to go in. They all just sort of stood near the water. But Harold Holt himself did get changed into his swimmers and wade into the ocean. and people saw him swimming out, and then they just saw him be whisked away, be sort of taken out by a tide and very quickly disappearing behind the waves, and then just never seen again. The woman who was with him on the day said that it was like a leaf being taken out. It was just this really quick and sudden and totally silent disappearance.
The Prime Minister of Australia just vanishes, carried away by a particularly strong tide. And I mean, we're talking about the leader of one of the world's most powerful countries, who slipped beneath the waves and was never seen again.
Then there was a massive, massive rescue operation. It wasn't immediately tweeted about in those days. There was this whole series of events where people had to run and get people's attention and say, the Prime Minister's gone missing. It took quite a long time to get the ball rolling, but eventually it became this massive search for the missing Prime Minister. It was scaled down 5 days later. His body was never found, and the mystery was never solved.
Okay, so James, so why did the conspiracy theories start taking hold? Because, I mean, it's weird that he disappeared, but it seems like he just made a mistake and, you know, overestimated his swimming ability and got caught in a riptide. So it seems like pretty straightforward to me.
It does seem straightforward. And yet I think the reason why the conspiracy theory started is really quite understandable. And it's because the police themselves never really reached a conclusion about why Mr. Holt had gone or whether he had even died for many days. It took a long time before they sort of concluded that he had died. And there was never any sort of formal theory by the police as to what had happened. That obviously just opened the floodgates to all manner of conspiracy theories.
Like what?
The popular one was that he was a Chinese spy who swam out to a submarine that was waiting for him and then was taken away to Beijing. It doesn't seem like the most efficient way to get the evidence back, you know? Surely you could write a cable.
This conspiracy theory was amplified by a journalist named Anthony Gray.
I don't know that Anthony Gray was a particularly sort of renowned journalist, but he wasn't like a renowned wacko either.
So what was the response to that? Did anyone try to debunk it?
The great response that came to that was from Harold Holt's wife, who said that her husband didn't even like Chinese food. So he couldn't, there's no way he's a spy for China because he doesn't even like Chinese food. Note to all the Chinese spies out there, that's all you've got to do to avoid detection. Just pretend to detest your own cuisine.
Harold Holt's body was never found, and it almost certainly never will be. He almost certainly died from a nasty riptide. But the world of conspiracy theories is alive and well, and they seem to be creeping into our politics in new and dangerous ways. But first things first, what makes somebody prone to believing conspiracy theories? What makes them prone to conspiratorial thinking?
I'm Professor Chris French. I'm head of the Anomalistic Psychology Research Unit.
That's at Goldsmiths University here in London.
Well, interestingly, when it comes to demographics, there aren't really that many strong correlates. So, I mean, often people think in terms of a kind of stereotypical, kind of white, male, middle-aged, locked away in a basement cellar somewhere, maybe with a tinfoil hat and so on and so forth. And that really isn't actually supported by the evidence.
But even if there aren't clear demographic indicators, there certainly are some psychological ones.
One of the interesting psychological dimensions that people have looked at is what's called locus of control. And this is basically the kind of disposition that you have, that we all have, as to whether you tend to think that events that happen in your life are primarily down to your own actions, your own decisions, or whether basically things happen to you through forces that are external to you. It will serve the function of kind of explaining to them why their lives are like that. It's not because of any kind of shortcomings on their part. It's because they are being victimized by these powerful others.
Another factor is having what's called a Manichaean worldview,
which is a belief in a battle between good and evil.
And these traits are so powerful that once a person goes down the rabbit hole, so to speak, they often just keep going deeper and deeper and deeper.
One of the single most powerful predictors of whether you believe in conspiracy X is, do you believe in conspiracy Y, even if they are totally unrelated to each other? And that even extends to the extent of mutually contradictory conspiracy theories.
We have reports from Paris that Diana, Princess of Wales, has been killed in a car accident and that her partner, Dodi Fayed, has also been killed. They were apparently being pursued by paparazzi on two motorcycles.
So that if you believe that Princess Di faked her own death, then you're also more likely to believe that the Secret Service in this country assassinated her. And they can't both be true. But the point is, something is being covered up. We are being lied to.
People who are prone to conspiratorial thinking are also subject to the same cognitive biases that you and I are. But for those who end up thinking about the world from a Manichaean worldview, or who have a feeling of not being in control of their lives, two types of bias in particular can be extremely damaging to their sense of rationality.
There's evidence to support what's called the proportionality bias, this kind of basic instinct we have that if some big event happens, it must have a big cause. Therefore, the idea that a slightly tipsy driver was responsible for killing Princess Di, no, that's not a big enough explanation. There must be a conspiracy behind it. That a lone gunman was responsible for the death of JFK. No, not big enough. There must be a conspiracy. Research suggesting what's called an intentionality bias. Again, there's lots of more general research that shows that we all have a kind of inbuilt tendency to think that when something happens, our initial default is to think that it happened because someone or something made it happen for a reason.
And of course, one of the biggest events in modern history was the September 11th attacks, which, to be absolutely clear, were orchestrated by Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. Any claims to the contrary have been thoroughly debunked, I assure you. But as I was editing this episode, I received an email that showed some of this kind of unhinged thinking. And the subject line was just puzzle pieces. "Dear Mr. Kloss," it began. "All right, this is going to sound insane, but more of the puzzle pieces fall into place daily, and I need to tell someone. I think Trump had something to do with 9/11. Hear me out." She proceeded to discuss all the sketchy evidence she saw and concluded, quote, "My brain is always seeing patterns, and I can't shake this, regardless of how often I shake things up." It was like she was pleading with me to confirm that she was right, that the puzzle pieces did fit, that her theory actually did make sense. To her, it seems to be this nagging thought that she can't shake, like an image that came into sudden focus for her. Like with that optical illusion where you look at the wine glasses or the faces, and once you see both, you can never go back to seeing just one of them. These days, these unhinged conspiracy theories seem to be spreading faster than ever, but we shouldn't pretend that they are anything new. Instead, as Chris French argues, they have always been around, but they can spread faster over the internet than ever before.
Conspiracies have always been there. I mean, sometimes people make the mistake of thinking it's a totally modern phenomenon. No, it isn't. Historically, they've always been there. But these days, they can spread so much more quickly.
In the era of Donald Trump, though, conspiracy thinking isn't just spreading faster, it's also moving into the political mainstream. Trump has repeatedly spread debunked and sometimes racist conspiracy theories, like the false notion that Barack Obama was born in Kenya, or the comically absurd notion that, quote, "The concept of global warming was created by and for the Chinese to make U.S. manufacturing non-competitive." He concludes, "It is a total and complete, very expensive hoax." And just to be clear, Barack Obama was born in Hawaii. And climate change? It's a very real and very serious threat to humanity. But since Donald Trump became president, he has breathed fresh life into conspiratorial thinking. And one conspiracy theory in particular stands out, a theory that can no longer be ignored, because it has so many radically unhinged followers. And that theory is called QAnon.
Those Trump supporters you see waving around the letter Q printed on signs and on their t-shirts are followers of Q, a anonymous poster on the message boards 4chan and 8chan. Q claims to be sharing insider government secrets with the masses and has spawned an entire movement, QAnon, which essentially believes the entirety of the Democratic Party and much of Hollywood are conspiring and running an underground pedophile sex trafficking ring.
That's Chris Hayes, a host on MSNBC, who has been covering conspiracy theories for a long time. And he's done a great job at shining a light onto this particularly insidious theory, called QAnon. Some people also refer to the theory as, quote, "the calm before the storm," in reference to what appeared to be one of those throwaway lines that Donald Trump sometimes just says when he's riffing with reporters.
"You guys know what this represents? Well, there is the calm before the storm."
Okay, so to be clear up front, because I think this is really important for the ethics of discussing these theories, the QAnon theory is not true. There is no evidence to suggest that any of it is true. And there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it is not true. If you're interested, legitimate, reliable journalistic outlets have repeatedly debunked the QAnon story over and over and over. So please do not fall down this dark rabbit hole. In fact, I really thought carefully about even mentioning some of these theories, because there's a risk that doing so could amplify them. But ultimately, I decided it was necessary. Because with or without me, literally millions of people already believe this stuff. And they vote. It's already affecting our politics. Trump even retweeted a QAnon account recently. So I decided that we've now reached a point where it's better and more important to understand it, so we can more effectively figure out how to bring a bit more rationality back into the debate. Okay, good. Now we've got that important detail out of the way, let's look at what QAnon supporters actually believe.
So Q refers to an individual or set of individuals who claims to have a top secret security clearance or Q-level security clearance.
That's Isaac Stanley Becker, a reporter for The Washington Post. Isaac has covered the QAnon phenomenon and written about the presence of QAnon supporters at Trump's rallies, especially after Trump made his cryptic "calm before the storm" comment.
So the first post referred to that statement by the president and then began delivering these hints or clues, what Q calls breadcrumbs to followers, about attempts by the president to fend off this coup against him. And the theory alleges that essentially all prior presidents have been corrupted and kind of in the pockets of evil influences, so much so that the military has recruited Trump to reverse this and to cleanse American politics of satanic and dangerous impulses and influences.
So to give you an idea of what these clues or so-called breadcrumbs actually sound like, I asked my dad to read one of them. When I was growing up, people always told him that he had a voice for radio, and I'm admittedly a bit jealous of it. So here's my dad's foray into the radio, reading a QAnon post. Just so you know, though, what's going on here is that POTUS refers to the President of the United States and HRC refers to Hillary Rodham Clinton.
POTUS will not go on TV to address nation. POTUS must isolate himself to prevent negative optics. POTUS knew removing criminal rogue elements as a first step was essential to free and pass legislation. Who has access to everything classified? Do you believe HRC, Soros, Obama, etc. have more power than Trump? Fantasy. Whoever controls the office of the presidency controls this great land.
Yeah, so they're all sort of like that. They're extremely strange and convoluted. They're cryptic, and they've got these little snippets of information that are deliberately left open to interpretation, so a lot of people can interpret them in different ways. But the posts don't tell the whole story, because the story here is really one that's about the followers of QAnon. Isaac Stanley Becker, that Washington Post reporter, he's spoken to followers of the movement, and he kindly put me in touch with one believer, a man named Paul Burton of Atlanta, Georgia. And Paul graciously agreed to do an interview with me.
I don't talk about this really with anyone. My life is pretty simple. I'm a dad, and I have a family life, and I work, and I take the kids to school, pick them up, and I don't have time to be part of any group. I'm not much of a joiner, shall we say. My political affiliations, mostly in the past, was an independent in California. I'd say 10, 15 years ago, I joined the Republican Party just because it seemed to be more aggressive in the war on terror and all that. But no, I've not been part of any group. I read a lot. I read probably too much, but that's kind of my hobby, I guess.
So, Paul, how did you actually first stumble across QAnon?
That's a good question, because I'm fairly sure, I'm not absolutely certain, but I think I saw a link on one of my Twitter feeds, and I clicked on it and I started looking at it. This was back in December, so QAnon had begun posting on 4chan or 8chan in late October of last year.
That's October of 2017.
So I just began reading posts as they came out.
Paul does say, however, that he doesn't let QAnon consume his life or define him. He doesn't browse 4chan or 8chan, those often disturbing message boards where QAnon was originally born.
I don't have the time or interest in getting into the 4chan or 8chan or any of the dark web or anything like that. I'm sure there's others out there who do, but they could probably take you down the rabbit hole pretty deep.
So how would you explain this to a friend, Paul? Like, if your friend said, who is Q, what is QAnon, what would you say to them?
I'm not 100% certain of what Q or Q is. However, it seems to be that it is a team consisting of Trump, a couple of civilians, and another seven or more military officers or military personnel. And from piecing together now, 2,200 posts over the last 11 months, just piecing things together and putting the puzzle pieces together, it seems to be that it is U.S. Army military intel surveillance, whatever they do, out of a base in Florida. They get the NSA feed, and they have been tracking everybody and everything, all communications. Their mission is to take down the bad guys, shall we say, the black hats, not only within the corruption in the DOJ, but also in the FBI, as well as other bad players in the United States and around the world.
But Paul is really clear that he doesn't buy into the whole QAnon business, just bits and pieces of it. For him, he's much more skeptical about the whole global pedophilia ring than other QAnon believers are, for example.
Supposedly the pedophilia thing is, there's no one party that's involved in that. Apparently it's big in Hollywood and it's big in Washington. When I say big, I mean it's there and it's not been uncovered, but apparently it's being rooted out and uncovered over the last year. No, I can't speak too much of that.
Paul is quick to say that he's not a disciple of Q or the Q team, just that it's one of many sources that he uses to try to figure out what's really going on.
I simply see it as a information source, almost like a news feed. If someone says, do you follow Q? Not as a disciple, of course, but someone says, do you follow CNN or Fox News or a person on Twitter? Yes, it's one of my sources for news, but it seems to be much more than that.
When I asked Paul for evidence to suggest his beliefs were rooted in reality, he pointed to a few key moments. A seemingly correct prediction about Saudi Arabia, and a series of supposedly deep state figures that were being taken down by Donald Trump.
Now we're seeing these dominoes fall in the FBI and DOJ one by one. This is all happening since Trump has taken office, which it doesn't seem to be a coincidence to me.
I pushed back and pointed out that Trump fired several of those figures, people like former FBI Director James Comey, not because they were part of the deep state, but because they were involved in investigating President Trump, and Trump wanted to get rid of them. I mean, President Trump admitted exactly that motivation to Lester Holt on national television in 2017.
When I decided to just do it, I said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story.
But when I put that interpretation of events to Paul, it was a bit like we were living in two different realities.
No, I don't really understand your question, but I don't see that they were just simply investigating. They seem to be co-opted by Hillary Clinton, Clinton people, the Clinton money, the Clinton power. I think if you look at the history, anyone that has gotten close to Bill and Hillary Clinton, their lives end up in tatters. They either end up in jail or just their careers sunk. And they seem to stand above it all. The Clintons co-opted the Obama people to an extent. And what we're seeing is all the pawns and knights and rooks being taken down.
This focus on Hillary Clinton is a unifying thread amongst QAnon believers. They still somehow see the vanquished former Secretary of State as this sort of boogeyman for everything that's wrong with politics these days. But one of the starkest dividing lines that splinters QAnon believers into different camps is what to make of the special counsel investigation that was led by the former FBI director, Robert Mueller.
Perhaps more interesting strain of the theory is that Trump only feigned collusion to create a sort of pretense for the hiring of Mueller, the special counsel, and that he and Trump are actually working together to take down these coup plotters and child sex traffickers, people like Hillary Clinton, people like Barack Obama, people like George Soros, and people like John McCain before his death, of course.
If all of this sounds crazy to you, you're not alone. It sounds crazy to me, too. But the thing is, Paul Burton didn't sound crazy to me. He was calm, he spoke with caveats and nuance, and I think he's genuinely interested in the truth.
I've always questioned things. I was the kid who, if he didn't know a word, he'd run to the 30-pound dictionary in the living room and look it up and see exactly what that meant. I try to question everything, question authority. I don't believe everything I read, and I try to form my own picture of things. Maybe it's just my curiosity and my way of thinking. I don't know.
Paul was nothing like what I expected him to be when I dialed his number. I don't know exactly what I was expecting, but it certainly wasn't him. And in a way, that actually made me much more worried. Because if unhinged conspiracy theories are only shared amongst the basement-dwelling tinfoil hat people who only see light when it shines out of their computer screens, then it's such a small segment of society that you don't really need to worry about it. But if a measurable percentage of a country believes in this stuff, including dads like Paul who drop their kids off at school and take their dogs for walks and read voraciously, then democracy itself is under threat. Because you can't solve problems or compromise or come together if you can't even agree on what is real and what is fantasy. And it seems to me like we're careening towards that really scary precipice in the United States right now. The problem, of course, is that these online conspiracy theories can prompt people to take action in the real world.
A man armed with an assault rifle opening fire inside a popular pizzeria.
The 28-year-old taken into custody. Police saying he told them he came to the establishment to self-investigate Pizzagate, a fake online conspiracy theory suggesting the local pizzeria was at the center of a child sex slave ring organized by Hillary Clinton and her former campaign manager, John Podesta.
The man who decided to, quote, self-investigate Pizzagate was convinced that children were being kept in chains in the basement of Comet Ping Pong in Washington, D.C. The pizzeria doesn't even have a basement. It's just an ordinary pizza shop. And it's perhaps unsurprising, but no less depressing, that Donald Trump has repeatedly retweeted one of the figures who was most responsible for spreading the lunatic Pizzagate theory, amplifying his reach and creating greater risks of real-world consequences. In August 2018, one QAnon believer transformed his car into an armored car and parked it so that it would block traffic on the bridge near the Hoover Dam. He had 900 rounds of ammunition and four weapons in the car, and the vehicle had been modified with these little openings so he could shoot out from the car. When law enforcement arrived, he demanded the release of a report from the Department of Justice, a report that had already been released. QAnon had falsely claimed that a second report was being withheld. Thankfully, the man was arrested without any violence, but it could have been so much worse. Around the same time, a different QAnon believer took over a cement plant, which he wrongly believed to be the site of a hidden child sex ring. And of course, conspiratorial thinking played a major role in the series of attempted pipe bombings that were addressed to some of President Trump's favorite targets in October 2018, as well as in the horrific murder of Jewish worshippers at a synagogue in Pittsburgh a few days later. The point here is obvious. Conspiracy theories are sparking domestic terrorism in the United States. And it seems to be happening more regularly than it did in the recent past. Any story of conspiracy theories is incomplete without talk of a major media ecosystem that makes a heck of a lot of money spreading a heck of a lot of lunacy. Yep, I'm talking about Alex Jones and InfoWars.
So Alex Jones has been a leading voice in the conspiracy theorist corner of the internet for more than 20 years. He's based in Austin, Texas, and this has been kind of his hobby horse since the late 1990s.
That's Jane Costin, a senior politics reporter at Vox, who has gone down the rabbit hole into the dark, weird world of Alex Jones. And some of the ideas he peddles on his site, InfoWars, are, well, absolutely crazy.
There are a lot of wild conspiracy theories that Alex Jones has said, like that, you know, FEMA is going to put Americans in concentration camps, or that Barack Obama smells like actual sulfur because he's a literal demon.
I promise she is not making that up. The claim spread so much that Barack Obama even responded to it directly in late 2016.
Democracy in a big, diverse country doesn't work if you constantly demonize each other. And I mean that literally, by the way. I was reading the other day, there's a guy on the radio who apparently Trump's on his show frequently. He said, me and Hillary are demons. Said we smell like sulfur. Ain't that something? Now, I mean, come on, people.
Now, you might think that someone like Alex Jones, who spreads such outlandish lies, must have a fringe viewership, right? I mean, in this day and age, how many people are really going to spend their time listening to an angry guy shouting crazy lies at them on a daily basis? And the answer, unfortunately, is quite a lot.
InfoWars is the website that Alex Jones devised. InfoWars gets as many as 10 million visitors a month. And before Alex Jones was kicked off YouTube, he had roughly 2.4 million subscribers to his YouTube channel. And in the 30 days before he was kicked off YouTube, he had about 17 million views.
17 million views. To give you an idea of how much that is, that clip that you just heard of Barack Obama debunking the notion that he's a demon who reeks of sulfur? Well, on the Associated Press YouTube channel, that's only got 9,727 views right now. So, yeah, 17 million is a lot. And the Obama demon stuff wasn't even that unusual for Jones. It's sort of a common theme, particularly when it comes to attacking people who criticize Jones's favorite politician, Donald Trump.
Enough is enough. The lies, the deceit, the fear-mongering. Journalists increasingly are feeling empowered to call out the Trump White House's lies.
That's Brian Stelter, the host of CNN's Reliable Sources. His show has been critical of President Trump for spreading easily debunked lies. So, of course, Alex Jones did a segment about Stelter. And as you might expect, Jones, that bastion of level-headed rationality, took a deep breath before engaging in a calm, thoughtful, evidence-based critique of Stelter.
These people are the literal demon spawn of the pit of hell. Look at him. And you know what? He is better than you if you keep letting him run your life. He runs your kids. He runs the schools. He runs the banks. This guy, this spirit, this smiling, leering devil that thinks you can't see what he is your enemy, period. All the narcissistic, devil-worshipping filth. I see you, enemy. I see you, enemy! 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 You are my enemy!
Yeah, so it's sort of like that all the time. And in that enraged shouting, you can understand why people with a warped Manichaean worldview, the people who think that the world is defined by a battle between good and evil, might find Jones appealing. But day in and day out, InfoWars spreads objectively false stories to millions of its disciples. My personal favorite, by the way, was their claim that John Kerry fired a laser beam from Antarctica in order to split a hurricane in half.
Do you deny it, for the record?
Well, I deny that. It was fired from the North Pole. I mean, God almighty, folks, if that's where we're going, we're in trouble.
And we are in trouble. Millions of people believe this garbage. And what's worse, they're actually funding people like Alex Jones in a big way, creating financial incentives to spread insane and false stories just to make a buck.
So Alex Jones's empire is largely funded by supplements and wellness products. InfoWars sells products that will allegedly help you avoid the water that Alex Jones says is turning frogs gay, or that these vitamins are necessary because you're being exposed to secret radiation. You know, you sell the problem and then you sell the solution to the problem that you've already sold.
How novel. A grifter who makes money while spreading unhinged lies and conspiracy theories. There's not really anyone else in public life in America like that, is there?
I just want to finish by saying your reputation's amazing. I will not let you down. You will be very, very impressed, I hope. And I think we'll be speaking a lot.
That's right. Donald Trump went on InfoWars and praised the reputation of its lunatic host, Alex Jones. And that's where this story goes from darkly amusing to downright sinister. Trump helped legitimize InfoWars, dragging it further into the political mainstream. Professor Chris French again.
What we can't deny anymore is the fact that it's, I think particularly with respect to conspiracy beliefs, it's such an important factor in terms of world politics that we can't just kind of think, oh, it's just a few cranks on the fringes. It isn't that anymore. If it ever was that, it certainly isn't anymore.
And the thing is, Alex Jones doesn't just spread ridiculous conspiracy theories about demons and laser beams. He also unleashes very real hatred into the world and inflicts pain on those who least deserve it.
Court hearings will resume today in lawsuits against radio host and conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. Several families from the 2012 Sandy Hook massacre are suing Jones for defamation. He has claimed the school shooting was a hoax. A separate defamation suit was filed by a man who Jones's website misidentified as the gunman in the Parkland school shooting in February.
It's not hard to see how these conspiracy theories have real-world consequences. Just try to imagine watching your 5-year-old child put on their backpack one morning. They head off to school, but they never come home because they were gunned down in an unspeakably horrific massacre. But the nightmare doesn't end there. Instead, disciples of Alex Jones start to harass you by claiming that your daughter or son didn't really die and that it's all a government hoax. If there are actual demons in the world, you've got to hope that they're gearing up to welcome Alex Jones to hell for that story alone. It's hard to come up with words to describe how unspeakably vile that is. But at least some tech companies did finally reach their breaking point with Alex Jones and banned him from their platforms, limiting his reach considerably.
Twitter is a private entity. Facebook is a private entity. YouTube and Google are private entities. And based on how our country is structured, they can do whatever they want. It turns out with people like Alex Jones or Milo Yiannopoulos or kind of other alt-right figures, when you ban them from social media platforms, it really does work. You know, I think that there was this idea that Alex Jones would become secretly more powerful, and there was kind of a bump to his viewership for about the first couple of weeks. But one of the funny things about our news cycle is things that happened 2 weeks ago might as well have happened 2 years ago, and Alex Jones has lost a ton of viewership and thus a lot of his power.
So we know that banning hateful conspiracy theorists from video sharing and social media platforms can be effective. Of course, banning them also gives credence to their incorrect viewpoint that there is some shadowy conspiracy to silence them, because they're the only ones spreading the truth. But the harder question is what to do about the people who believe the conspiracy theories themselves, the true believers. The problem is pretty straightforward. Anyone who believes in conspiracy theories is, by definition, choosing to discount evidence and rational thought in favor of snippets of what-if speculation. So the normal way of convincing someone of an idea by presenting rational thought and evidence just isn't very effective.
When you try and argue with a true believer in those kind of conspiracies, it's like trying to nail jelly to the wall.
And the problem is that conspiracy theories inhabit a strange world, where the very act of trying to debunk them confirms to the true believers that it's all a cover-up, that people who are in positions of power in the media or in academia don't want you to know the truth.
You're either sheeple if you buy the conspiracies, or maybe you are actually a conspirator yourself. I mean, I'm often accused of being paid by the government. You know, I wish.
But still, conspiracy theorists have this sense that they're in on some big secret, a secret that normal people aren't in on.
The one thing they have got is this kind of notion that they are superior in at least that one sense. They know the way the world is, even though the rest of you idiots don't.
And that's why convincing the true believers that they are wrong is often a lost cause. Professor Jason Reifler again.
Conspiracy theories are a particularly difficult thing to try and correct. If you just leave the door open a little bit, they'll find something to hold on to.
Take the false claim that Barack Obama was born in Kenya, for example, a conspiracy theory that was brought into the political mainstream by Donald Trump. Barack Obama was born in Hawaii.
Yes, in fact, I was born in Hawaii, August 4th, 1961, in Kapi'olani Hospital.
There was even an announcement of his birth in the local newspaper in Hawaii just after he was born. I mean, that would have to be some serious forethought to plant a birth announcement in a Hawaiian newspaper from Kenya 47 years in advance, on the off chance that someday he might want to be eligible to become president. But despite that far-fetched logic, even the birth announcement in the Hawaiian newspaper wasn't enough for the conspiracy theorists. They demanded that Obama must release his birth certificate. So he did. But even that wasn't enough. So he released something called his long-form birth certificate.
when the quote-unquote long-form birth certificate was finally released, that one of the things that people argued back on and said, well, that's not actually a birth certificate. It says it's a certificate of live birth, which, of course, I mean, that's people who are really looking for anything. I mean, that is very effortful processing.
So it doesn't often work to try to convince conspiracy theorists that they're wrong. But Chris French and some of his colleagues decided to try a novel approach recently. Conspiracy theorists were constantly accusing them of trying to silence their beliefs. So they decided to invite a conspiracy theorist to participate in one of their academic conferences on conspiracy theory research.
We had an interesting situation at a co-organized a one-day conference on conspiracy theories, and one of our speakers had to pull out at the last minute. And we also got wind of the fact that this event, which was basically really around the kind of whole idea of looking at belief in conspiracies rather than conspiracy theories themselves, but we got wind of the fact that this event was being kind of discussed on various websites and conspiracy fora, and it was kind of, you know, is this just a meeting of like-minded academics, or is it something far more sinister? And I kind of think, well, no, it's an idea I came up with in the pub, actually. But anyway, we thought, to solve this problem, we invited one of the conspiracy theorists. We said, look, if you want to come along, rather than come along and disrupt the meeting, you have a speaker, you have this spare slot we've now got, and they can present your side of things. And that's the way it worked. It made for an interesting day. And we all went off to the pub afterwards. Yeah, this was kind of the skeptics as well as the believers in the conspiracies and so on, happily kind of chatting away, having a drink there. And my postgrad, Rob Brotherton, who's written an excellent book on belief in conspiracies called Suspicious Minds, he was chatting away to one of the conspiracy theory believers. And he made the obvious point. He said, look, how is it, if you claim that there's this massive conspiracy going on and that anybody that speaks out against it is putting their life at risk, how is it we've just seen your man there talking to a room full of several hundred people? You know, is he putting his life at risk? And this guy kind of leaned forward and said, well, actually, we think he may be a plant. He really couldn't make this stuff up, you know.
In a way, then, you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. If you ignore conspiracy theories, true believers think that the media is trying to suppress them.
If not given airtime, that feeds into a narrative of, oh, this is really secret. Nobody, people aren't recognizing the truth. It's, you know, very X-Files. The truth is out there.
But on the other hand, if you discuss the conspiracy theories and try to debunk them, it's further proof that the media, academics, and the government are trying to cover up the truth.
It's also almost the pure definition of a catch-22.
And on top of that catch-22, you've also got what we could call the Trump problem. What do you do about politicians who take advantage of conspiratorial thinking for their own partisan gain? Previously, there seemed to be a sort of elite pact that those who spread conspiracy theories were shunned, laughed out of their political party, or relegated to the fringes of society. But now that elite pact has collapsed completely, and those who peddle conspiracy theories like fringe nutcases are no longer on the fringe. They're in the White House.
Collectively, the elites were all better off if we behave appropriately, but each individual elite is slightly better off potentially defecting and pushing the boundaries of what we can do, and I have no idea how we solve that particular collective action problem.
Some recent research has suggested that political extremism is a major predictor of whether you're likely to believe in any given conspiracy theory. But conspiracy theories themselves can also fuel political extremism. That being said, there are some encouraging findings in recent academic research. For example, some scholars have shown that people who have a better understanding of how the media actually operates are less likely to believe in conspiracy theories, which points to a way that education could help over time. But still, a lot of the solutions are long-term, even as the damage of conspiratorial thinking is happening right now. And that leaves us with a troubling but inescapable point. For the foreseeable future, conspiracy theory belief is only going to spread further, because it's coming from people in positions of authority, coming from people that you're supposed to be able to believe. We now have to accept a new reality, too, that the President of the United States is himself a conspiracy theorist. The Alex Jones conspiracy theories share a key feature with most conspiracy theories. They seek to determine who is really in control.
I'm fascinated by conspiracy theories in general because I think that conspiracy theories say something about how we attempt to understand the world as we see it. And, you know, it's an effort to say that, no, there actually is a force that's in control. It just happens to be, you know, a globalist cabal or the Catholic Church or the Russians or something like that. And so I think that a lot of his conspiracy theories really go to this idea that someone somewhere is in charge, and that he can figure out who it is.
In one study released in late 2018, 23% of Trump voters and 13% of Clinton voters agreed with the statement that, quote, there is a single group of people who secretly control events and rule the world together. About 13% of Brits agreed with that, too. Of course, some people's ideas of who is really in charge are more outlandish than others.
In simple terms, there is a predator race which take a reptilian form. They're feeding off humanity. They've turned humanity into a slave race. They demand human sacrifice. That's where Satanism comes in. They feed off human energy, particularly feed off the energy of children.
That was David Icke, interviewed in a documentary produced by Vice News called Conspiracy of the Lizard Illuminati. It's fascinating. Go check it out. Icke used to be a professional soccer player and sports broadcaster before he decided to become a professional conspiracy theorist. He's also widely regarded as an anti-Semitic lunatic. One of his central claims, a claim that has netted him millions of fans across the globe, is that shape-shifting lizards rule the world while wearing human skins to trick us into believing that they are really human. Those crazy ideas have made him a lot of money, millions of dollars, and he's sold hundreds of thousands of books.
He's interesting insofar as he, even with these wild ideas, has a very large following. And, you know, he can kind of sell tickets to Wembley Arena and get that full.
And as you might expect, conspiracy theories have a weird way of metastasizing. They morph as they spread, they grow more outlandish, the conspiracy gets weirder and weirder as people build on the unhinged beliefs of others. And perhaps one of the strangest theories, a theory with a surprisingly large following, is the false belief that something sinister is going on at the Denver International Airport in Colorado. And depending on who you ask, that sinister something might be about shape-shifting lizards, or the Illuminati, or the Freemasons. And, you know, we needed to get to the bottom of that, obviously.
My name is Carrie Coppell.
Carrie is a writer and editor based in Los Angeles. When she was working at BuzzFeed, she looked into the conspiracy theories swirling around Denver International Airport. And I asked her to walk me through the main points of the theory.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of like weird stuff, actually, at DIA. I'm a skeptic by nature, but there are actually some weird things that you're like, why is this like this?
One of the first dead giveaways that something was up, conspiracy theorists claimed, was that the capstone that dedicated the airport had a Masonic symbol on it.
The capstone, and once it was finished, does have like a Masonic symbol on it, and people are like, oh, if you add up the date, so it was dedicated, let me see.
That date was March 19th, 1994. And if you add up the digits in 19 and 1994, you get 33, the number that is apparently the highest level of Freemasonry. Obviously, this couldn't have been a coincidence. But then there was more. Denver International Airport had some tunnels running beneath it.
So the network of tunnels are supposedly, some have theorized, these sort of like New World Order command bunkers, or like a places for the global elite to go in case of like an apocalyptic event. People like billionaires, politicians, probably like what conspiracy theorists would think of as like the Illuminati. Like, I'm sure Beyonce would be there.
What could those sinister tunnels be for, you might ask?
It was sort of later said that they had become like the airport's rail system, like taking you between terminals.
Then there were the cost overruns, which never happened in a major construction project.
Rumors had been that like the reason why this airport had taken so long to finish, it was years behind schedule. It went over $2 billion over budget, billion with a B.
I love the idea that the Illuminati would have a cost overrun to build a secret network of tunnels and bunkers and then would just like publicly ask for $2 billion more dollars and nobody would notice.
No, it's so true. It's like, yeah, we're going to need another $2 billion, but we can't really tell you why.
Okay, so we've got the secret tunnels, the Masonic symbol, but then there's also Denver International Airport's most distinctive feature, a massive statue of a huge blue Mustang that the locals call Lucifer.
So the Mustang statue is huge. It's 32 feet tall, 9,000 pounds. It's got glowing red eyes, like literally glowing, like at night they glow, they light up.
And that statue has a dark past. perhaps a past that the Illuminati, or the Freemasons, or maybe even Barack Obama, the literal demon smelling of sulfur, don't want you to know about.
That's what got me. Like, it's creepy on its own, but it's like, whatever, it's art. But yeah, it literally, I don't think he had even completed it. Like, a piece of it fell on him as he was working on it and like severed an artery in his leg, which is, that's creepy.
That's right. Blucifer killed his sculptor, Luis Jimenez, in a freak accident. He died trying to create his Mustang masterpiece. And of course, his death only amplified the conspiracy theories. And then there's the pièce de résistance here, the notion that the runways at the airport are actually a giant swastika. So to get to the bottom of that, Carrie asked the representative of the Denver airport if that was intentional.
But they said, like, we think it looks like a pinwheel. Like, that was their response.
So what are we left with? Conspiracy theories are everywhere. Researchers from the University of Chicago have concluded that in any given year, roughly half of American adults subscribe to at least one conspiracy theory, even if there's no evidence to support it whatsoever. Nearly one in four Americans believes that the US government was behind September 11th. That's not true. That Barack Obama was born in Kenya. Again, not true. And that Wall Street bankers conspired to cause the financial collapse of 2008 deliberately. No, that's not true either. And in the era of social media and YouTube, information flows faster than ever. Even incorrect, misleading, false, and unhinged information. The second that a major international event takes place, there are people online hoping to misinform the world about who is really behind it. And those people are often trying to push an agenda, or make money off gullible people, or both. And now that politicians have realized that spreading conspiracy theories can earn them votes, we're in an increasingly dangerous era with incentives to foster lunacy while subverting the truth. But we can't just blame others exclusively for something that seems to be part of a coping mechanism, a human instinct to deal with large, unexpected, and often tragic events. Sometimes things just happen randomly, not for any reason, not because of sinister forces. And in human psychology, randomness is much more threatening than discernible causes, even if those causes are shadowy or sinister. As Jan-Willem van Pruyen from the University of Amsterdam has argued, randomness is more threatening than having an enemy. You can prepare for an enemy. You can't prepare for coincidences. Regardless, we have to wake up to the reality that conspiratorial thinking is widespread, it's becoming more mainstream, and that flight away from rationality and reason is a serious threat to the social glue that holds our societies together. It's a threat to democracy. That's why, in my view, we need to tackle the problem head-on, by using evidence, rationality, and logic to debunk conspiracy theories rather than pretending they don't exist. We need to promote media literacy and better education so that students are equipped to spot and dismiss conspiracy theories. And we need to insist that politicians who spread conspiracy theories be held accountable. The world has enough real problems that we don't need to go around making up fake ones too. But of course, that's what I would say if I were a shape-shifting lizard, isn't it? Thanks for listening. Subscribe now and please rate the show on whatever platform you use to get your podcasts. Next episode...
Even under the Taliban, they were sending people from the south to Herat in the west to teach people how to farm opium.
We look at narco-politics. How have drugs been used in warfare? Why did British soldiers get high on hallucinogens and try to talk to birds? How does the heroin trade facilitate the disturbing practice of child brides in Afghanistan? Why does cocaine in London nightclubs pass through the dictatorship of Guinea-Bissau in West Africa? And does the legalization of some drugs make sense? Go on. Click on to the next one. You know you want to. This episode was written and narrated by me, Brian Kloss. The executive producer was George McDonough. The producer and sound editor was Alex Portfelix. Theme music by Scott Holmes. News clips in this episode came from NBC News, Vice News, ITV, and MSNBC. Special thanks to all of them. Goodbye for now.